Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. In this special edition of Palestine Declassified, we're going to examine the extraordinary armed uprising of the Palestinian people against the Zionist entity, which has repeatedly and flagrantly spurned every single peaceful attempt to secure justice for Palestine. First up is Latifa Abu Chakra with a special report about this audacious military offensive by Palestinian freedom fighters that began in the early hours of Saturday morning on October the 7th.
As fragile as a spider's web, the Zionist entity is shaking with fear. In an early morning shock, Palestinian resistance factions from Gaza launched an unprecedented three-pronged attack on the entity. First, armed fighters sailed over the Israeli fence to Gaza using hand gliders. Simultaneously, 5,000 rockets were launched into the Zionist entity from the open-air prison of Gaza, disabling that much-vaunted Iron Dome system. At the same time, Palestinians broke down the fence, which fighters had sailed over, using bulldozers. What ensued was the homecoming of at least 1,000 Palestinians from the resistance factions into the fragile Zionist entity. Military bases were seized by the resistance, and Israel's Merkava tanks were captured and taken back to Gaza. Settlements like Sderot, whose Zionist guests had previously watched from hilltops while Gaza was bombed, were seized by the resistance. Over 100 settlers have been taken as prisoners of war by the resistance. The vast majority are members of the occupation forces. Some are extremely high-ranking figures, like General Nimrod Aloni, commander of the Depth Corps and former commander of the 143rd Gaza Division. He was unceremoniously marched from his bed in his underwear by the resistance forces. An area of occupied Palestine larger than the Gaza Strip was taken and held by the resistance factions, who reached within only 10 kilometers of the West Bank city of El Khalil, known to settlers as Hebron. It is documented that resistance factions were able to fashion weapons from unexploded munitions dropped on them by the Israelis. But did weapons from NATO escapades in Afghanistan and Ukraine really end up in Gaza? Time will tell. The fear of South Lebanon is palpable among the settlers, so much so that an Israeli occupation unit opened fire on an approaching truck close to Lebanon. They discovered that the vehicle carried 7 Israeli fighters. All had been killed by the Zionist-friendly fire. Overall, in a space of 48 hours, at least 700 settlers were killed. The vast majority were part of the occupation forces. To put the figure into perspective, in proportion to the size of the population of the colony, that is the equivalent of over 20,000 people in the United States. In the midst of it all, Russian hacker group Killnet took down the site of the Israeli regime administration, further spreading panic and fear. Nearly all major stocks in Israel are in the red, with the benchmark index recording the biggest loss for over a year. Poland and Bulgaria have sent military planes to evacuate their citizens and bring them back home to Europe.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and he's now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and he's a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest today is Sami Al-Aryan, who is a public affairs professor and a long-standing political activist whose roots are in Palestine. And Sami has vigorously campaigned for Palestinian liberation for many years, and he was blacklisted in the United States because of his political views. And he joins us today via Skype from Istanbul. Welcome to the show. Sami, perhaps we could start with you. Are we witnessing the death spasms of the Zionist idea, do you think?
Well, we have to go back to the origins of Zionism. Zionism was the political movement of Jewish elites at the end of the 19th century, and it was their response to Europe's anti-Semitism that existed at the time, particularly in Russia, the pogroms, and continued to what the experts would call the Jewish question. And they tried to answer that by basically creating an exclusivist, settler, colonial, racist state that has been trying for over a century to uproot the native people of Palestine from their native land and try to replace them with Jews around the world. This is what Zionism is about, and I think it has failed But it continues to be strong in terms of the state because of the support it has been receiving from mainly Western governments, particularly the United States. But I think now it's becoming very clear that that kind of a response would not be accepted in the 21st century, particularly with the steadfastness of the Palestinians and the resistance to this racist, exclusivist movement and entity.
No, indeed. I mean, David, do you think Israel was caught completely unawares by this operation?
It does seem so. I mean, there's been some reporting, hasn't there, that the Egyptian intelligence services said something was going to happen, but they were ignored. So, I mean, I've seen the various other theories, let's not title them conspiracy theories, that have said that this is a false flag, that the Zionists let it happen, let all these hundreds of people be killed, or they thought that maybe a lesser number would be killed. But no, it's clear that that's not what's happened. What's happened clearly has been an operation planned for many, many months in Gaza and with the other resistance factions across the territories. And it's taken them entirely by surprise, but also, more importantly, it has inflicted an extremely significant military, intelligence and psychological defeat on the Zionists. They didn't think that this could ever happen to them. And the fact that they've had to evacuate people, thousands and thousands of people from all of the settlements around Gaza, and indeed they're talking about evacuating all the settlements near the northern border should Hezbollah enter the conflict much more significantly than they have so far. So we're seeing a defeat for Zionism and a crisis for them, really, because they're facing a real difficulty now of the possibility of the end of the Zionist entity.
Indeed, and people queuing up at the airport, weren't they, to actually leave Israel.
To be evacuated, yes.
So indeed, some prominent figures, actually, in the Zionist entity, as well as I understand it. But, Sammy, what's the significance, would you say, of resistance factions capturing General Nimrod Aloni, do you think?
It's quite significant. Yeah, we're going to understand that this is the first time in over 50 years where a senior military leader is in the hands of the resistance movements, in the hands of the Palestinians. He would be a huge bargaining chip in order to get over 5,000 Palestinians who have been languishing in Israeli jails for years. Over 200 of them have prison sentences up to life or life sentences. Therefore, he would be a huge bargaining chip against the Israeli government in trying to free and also to get much of the Israeli plans, and he would be certainly interrogated. And much of what Israel is planning for the Palestinians, particularly in Gaza, will be they'll be able to get it out of them.
Yes, indeed. David, I wonder if you could say a word or two as well about the conditions that people in Gaza have been living in over the years.
Well, people know the phrase, don't they? This is an open air prison.
Indeed.
And of course, there's been an attempt by the Zionists in the last week or so, 10 days, to say, oh no, it's not occupied. Look, we left Gaza in 2005. This is not an occupation. But of course, it's entirely surrounded. It's surveilled 24 hours a day, and it underlines the scale of the achievement that the resistance could undermine all of that. But this is an open air prison, and they've even in the last few days intensified the siege. No water, no electricity, nothing's going in or out. And they've even closed the Rafah crossing into Egypt, despite saying to people in Gaza, you must leave. The Rafah crossing is open. It's not anymore, and they're talking about bombing that as well.
Indeed.
So this is an open prison. It has been for many years. Most of the water in Gaza is not drinkable. There are shortages of everything, including medicines. There are food problems. It's been bombed so many times that there's so much rubble there that they've had to actually start to use the rubble in ingenious ways to build new buildings. So it's an appalling state. Yes. It's the worst place in the world under constant military supervision and, yes, occupation by the Israelis.
Yes, indeed. I mean, you say that obviously it's well known that it's an open-air prison, and yet, you know, the corporate media, if you actually read the corporate media or listen to the broadcast channels of the corporate media, they don't really talk about it in those terms, do they?
Well, thankfully, I don't depend on the corporate media
Although, of course, many people still do.
True. Although, of course, many, many more in the last 20 years have turned off from that. But yes,
true.
The corporate media presents a systematically distorted and skewed view and version of what's happening. Although in the question, on the question of occupation, the Zionists have been complaining in the last little while about CBC, the Canadian broadcasters, saying that journalists should not use the word, should use the word occupation, because it still is an occupation. And, yes. And so that's even the mainstream media won't go as far to what should we call it, to kind of fantasy land as the Zionists want them to.
No, indeed. But Sammy, I mean, in what way would you say is this war different from previous wars on Gaza?
It's quite different. I mean, if you look at the previous four or five wars starting from 2008, 2009, all of them were initiated by the Zionist state. This time it was different. It was surprising. It was the, you know, you're describing as an open-air prison. It was basically a prison break, where the Palestinians themselves took the initiative and attacked, and always you have that benefit of the surprise. And therefore, what happened, what ensued after that, was huge success, huge victory for the resistance. They were able to actually dismantle this myth of the invincibility of the Israeli army, that this is not an invincible army, but in fact, it's an army that was caught flat-footed, and they were shown by few fighters. I mean, these fighters were basically not a regular army. These are mostly volunteers, Palestinian resistors, but they're determined, and they have the will to fight until they gain their freedom and independence and liberation. And we've seen in the first 60 hours how they were going, attacking the military bases, the settlers, the settlements. They were bringing back all kinds of prisoners of war in order to force the exchange and free their comrades in prisons.
Yeah. I mean, David, it said that I think it was 11 U.S. citizens were killed in the operation. I mean, what do you think explains, you know, so many foreign nationals being present in Palestine?
And there's been a British person being confirmed now as being killed over the weekend. Well, what explains this, of course, is something quite different to the explanation about civilians or American citizens or British citizens even being killed in Ukraine, because they are, everybody understands, they are mercenaries. But here, these people are either settlers or they're actually involved directly in being enrolled in what's called the Israel Defense Forces, the Israel Occupation Forces. Like the British guy, for example, 19 or 20 years old, was actually in the IDF.
Yes.
Now this is about British citizens as foreign fighters.
Yes,
you know, we call these people foreign fighters if they were in Syria or somewhere else, but we don't call them foreign fighters in this case. And of course, when those people who regularly go from Britain or from the US to join the oppressive forces of Israel come back, they're not interrogated as being terrorists. They're not interrogated and asked for why they've got involved in armed violence and killing of civilians. And actually, you know, in the structural violations of international law, which Israel day by day is committing. And so there's a real question here about how we actually change the way in which our society works so that people from the UK are not allowed to go to fight for Israel.
No, indeed. I mean, the Shadow Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, was saying, you know, our thoughts are with the British citizen who was killed. But surely the question should be, why are British citizens serving in the Israeli occupation forces? But we'll just pause there for a moment because we've got another report now looking at the strategic implications for the United States and Israel as a result of the military operation by the Palestinian resistance factions.
As the Palestinian resistance factions prepared for their operation early on Saturday morning, they must have known they were about to embark on what will surely be seen as the most historic mission of any Palestinian resistance fighters. They broke out of the open-air prison of Gaza for the first time since Gaza was occupied in 1967. Of course, the Zionist regime has answered the challenge with a bloody onslaught on civilians, killing more than 100 children in little over a day. They deliberately and openly targeted civilian infrastructure in a frenzy of revenge that hides the strategic vacuum. They've diverted personnel from the West Bank and have laid siege to Gaza. Nothing can go in or out. But the chess game can easily end in an existential threat. Never has the idea that Israel is a temporary entity been so palpable. The United States has issued bellicose warnings and says it is moving forces closer to the entity. But this has drawn fiery riposte from the resistance axis, from Hezbollah, and from the Iraqi resistance, making it plain that escalation means that U.S. personnel will be legitimate targets across the whole region. President Joe Biden gave a nod to the difficulties faced by the much-vaunted U.S. hegemon when he warned supporters of the Palestinians not to take advantage of the circumstances. He didn't say it, but the circumstances are a decline of U.S. power, a notable shortage of U.S. weaponry, which has been effectively destroyed in Ukraine. A little-known U.S. stockpile of ammunition held in Israel has been depleted by supplies in Ukraine. Current Pentagon plans to increase production will not even keep pace with the 6,000 shells expended each day by the Ukrainians. The entry of Hezbollah into conflict from the north is an indication of the strategic vice that Israel finds itself in. By Monday, Zionist radar station was decommissioned and the border fence at the northern border with Lebanon was blown up. Any ground war in Gaza will face stiff resistance, and there will be many more occupation force casualties. Does the entity have the appetite for this? And will it mean the foundations of Zionism begin to crumble? Since the beginning, the security of the Zionist entity has depended on having enough Jewish citizens to win the demographic struggles against the Palestinians. With so many settlers fleeing from the airports and settlers from Poland and Bulgaria being evacuated, how long before the entity crumbles and the dismantling of Zionism begins in earnest? If the special military operation in Ukraine was the first act of the age of multipolarity, the prison bust from Gaza is the opening of the second act. The future is unwritten.
Sammy, your family was expelled from Palestine in 1948, wasn't it? I mean, can you tell us about how you responded to the Gaza breakout over the weekend?
I mean, generations of Palestinians had their hope, the hope of the return to their ancestors' lands. My grandfather and my father, who both passed away years ago, had that hope. It was not fulfilled. I have that hope, which I hope that it would be fulfilled during my lifetime. But if not, certainly my children would have that hope. What we witnessed this weekend was that this is possible, that this myth that the Palestinians would forget over generations, that the old would die and the new would forget, is just a myth. It's not true. The fact of the matter is that millions of Palestinians outside Palestine, inside Palestine, yearn to the time where we would enter Palestine and be in that land again. You know, this notion of two-state, one-state solutions where it will basically exclude millions of Palestinians from going back is not going to succeed. I think our goal, our objective should be the dismantlement of the Zionist state because of its racist, exclusivist, colonial structure, that this is an apartheid system that cannot survive the change in this world. And therefore, when this crumbles, and we have seen a glimpse of how could that be, when that happens, then we could truly then talk about peace and talk about harmony and solve, by the way, the Jewish problem, because Zionism redefined Judaism, and I think we need to save Judaism from the evil and from the ideology of Zionism.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. David, I mean, would you say that this was an explosion of anger from Gaza in response to the endless provocations from the Zionist entity, or do you think there's something more strategic going on here?
Well, it would be no surprise to say that people in Gaza are a little bit angry.
Indeed.
With the Zionists. But this is not some spasm, some emotional outburst. This has been planned for a long, long time, at least a year, it seems, that Hamas and the other resistance factions, who we don't talk about enough,
indeed.
People talk about this being Hamas indeed. Doing this or Hamas doing that.
But
it's Hamas,
it's
yes.
Yes.
It's the Palestinian Islamic Jihad.
Yes.
It's the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine.
Indeed.
The Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine were involved. And indeed, even armed groups, or the armed wing of Fatah, have
yes.
been involved in some of these actions,
sure.
not to mention the various factions across the West Bank. So this is a thing which has been in planning for at least a year and is a strategic strategic activity. So it's not as if this is over. There are other sorts of things which are going to fall into place. We've seen already from the north Hezbollah and to some extent other factions like the Palestinian Islamic Jihad in Lebanon making a breach of the fence at the border. This is a strategic thing, and there are all sorts of structural questions in this chess game about who next comes into the frame. And that's what we have to see. That's what the future tells us here. This is not going to be something where the Zionists can just crush the resistance, because there are all sorts of consequences for their actions.
Yes, indeed. Of course, you know, the focus just being on Hamas by the corporate media is another example, I suppose, of the misreporting by the mainstream press and broadcast media. But Sammy, what do you think the strategy of the resistance factions is?
Well, I don't think there is any illusion among the resistance fighters that this was a war of liberation. I think they had several objectives in mind, five in particular. The first one would be to stop this daily encroachment, incursion, desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and the holy places that have been taking place throughout the year, particularly in the last 3 weeks. Secondly, it was an attempt also to stop the incursion and the daily attacks on Palestinian youth in different West Bank cities, killing them, imprisoning them, detaining them, kidnapping them, which has also claimed over 240 lives this year in the West Bank alone. 40 of them are children. Third, it was an attempt also to, because Israel has been refusing to exchange its prisoners for the few prisoners in Gaza, so there was an attempt to basically get more prisoners of war to force Israel to make that, since 5,500 Palestinians, including many women and children, in prison, and their lives have been even made much worse when Ben Gafir became the person in charge of the prison system. And fourth, it is to lift the siege on the 16-year blockade and siege against Gaza. Over 2 million people have been under siege now without the word really caring or given much attention to this tragedy, to this genocidal policy. And fifth and last, which is very important, is to show the world that the Palestinians are determined and resolved to continue fighting and resisting the occupation, including to show the world that they are capable of defeating an enemy on the ground. And I call also that our fight is not just militarily, that we need to engage the Zionist groups and Zionist ideology and Zionist supporters and governments, those who support it, in all fields, politically, economically, commercially, legally, human rights, artistically, media-wise, in all spheres, in all geographies.
Yes, indeed. But David, I mean, what do you make of the response of the remainder of the resistance axis? Do you think that will deter the Zionists?
Well, I think people need to understand that the resistance axis is an actual thing, that the resistance in Lebanon, the Hezbollah, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, the Ansar Allah in Yemen, and of course the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is an actual functioning set of organizations who work together. They don't plan each other's activities, but they are coordinating with each other. And that's the key to this, is that if there is an escalation from the Americans, the resistance in Hezbollah, in Iraq, have said that they will regard U.S. targets across the region as legitimate. Now, that is a big question. What does that mean in terms of wider conflagration? It's also a question about what happens if there is a ground invasion of Gaza. If there's a ground invasion, the IDF, the Israeli occupation forces, will take very, very heavy casualties. And it will also mean a massive escalation. Hezbollah will almost certainly come in from the north. And, and that, of course, is something which will be concentrating the minds of Netanyahu and his cabinet about how far they can go to pursue their goals of eliminating and expelling all Palestinians.
Sure, yeah, well, that's it, I'm afraid, for another show today. So I'd like to thank our guest, Sami Al-Arian, and, of course, our resident expert, Professor David Miller. Palestine Declassified will be back next week with more forensic investigations and analysis. In the meantime, you can help us to spread the truth about the Palestinian uprising by sharing today's program on your social media platforms. And remember, you can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter and Telegram, where we post regular clips and updates. So until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now. This is for Palestine, Ramallah, West Bank, Gaza. This is for the child that is searching for an answer. This is not just a war over stolen land. Why do you think little boys are throwing stones at tanks? And we'll never really know how many people are dead. They drop bombs on innocent girls while they sleep in their bed. Israel is a terror state, they're terrorists that terrorize. I'll testify, my television televise, I'm telling lies. How many more resolutions have to be violated? How many more children have to be annihilated? This is not a war, it is systematic genocide. But whatever they try, Palestine will never die. Free, free Palestine. Free, free Palestine. Free.